Welcome to the Regen Brands Podcast. This is a place for consumers, operators, and investors to learn about the consumer brands supporting regenerative agriculture and how they're changing the world. This is your host, Kyle, joined with my co-host, Dave C. Let's dive in.
On this episode, we have Megan and Keith Rowe, who are the co-founders of White Leaf Provisions. White Leaf is supporting regenerative agriculture through their baby food and applesauce products, with many new items coming soon. In this episode, we learn more about how Megan and Keith's first child inspired them to start a regenerative food company, how they're planning to scale the brand across new categories and retailers, and how White Leaf is creating regenerative supply chains through their important work with organic and biodynamic certified producers across the globe. Let's go.
Keith, Megan, thanks so much for being with us. We have Keith and Megan Rowe from White Leaf Provisions today, y'all. We're really excited to have them. They are trailblazing in the regen baby food arena. So really excited about what they're working on. Really excited to have them on as guests. And y'all, if you could just kind of help fill the audience in to start with, what is White Leaf Provisions? What do y'all do? What kind of products do you have? And kind of how everything got started, that would be great.
Yeah, totally. Thank you guys for having us on. Really appreciate it. White Leaf Provisions, we're a family-run business, a husband and wife team. And I guess after becoming parents for the first time, we noticed a gap in the market, or we noticed there was a huge void in the market for the conversation around regenerative farming. We were looking for products that were regeneratively farmed. We could not find them after both of our backgrounds in Europe, and seeing how it was on such a different scale in Europe. We set out to build a trusted family brand over here that would launch baby food and other lines of products that all had regenerative farming at their core. Yeah.
Awesome. So let's expand on that real quick. And also just want to note that the color coordination between the four of us today is just on par. So it's really, really killing it with like the greenish flag vibe. So, we didn't set on memo. That's just totally organic. You mentioned that your experience in Europe had already sort of brought a level of awareness around regenerative products, to you. And then as parents, you're looking for baby food that was regenerative, not available. So tell me about buying food in Europe and how, like, why is regenerative more of a thing there than it is in the United States?
Yeah, totally. I guess I should go back. Kind of my background, guys, born and raised in Ireland, grew up in a little small farming community, southeast coast of Ireland. Really cool way to grow up. Grew up surrounded by lots of little small family-run organic farms. Really cool way to grow up. And so that kind of started my passion for very pure, simple foods. I went on to be a classically French-trained chef. And I cooked throughout Europe and Australia and Asia for lots of years, most of those years executive level. But being in the culinary scene in Europe, that's kind of where I got introduced to, regenerative farming. And in particular in Europe, this biodynamic certification. The Demeter International, founded in Germany, almost 100 years old. It's in Europe, it's viewed as really the kind of gold standard for
organic, in Europe,
sustainable,
right?
Regenerative farming. It is the top of the table for all of those. So being in the culinary scene, that's where I became aware of Demeter certified products, Demeter farming, Demeter produce. And that kind of didn't really play a part in White Leaf until, like I said, we became parents.
And I spent many years studying for my education in Europe. I did my I did many years abroad throughout college, and then I did my master's in Paris. So I was really familiar with biodynamic standards, how things were farmed in Europe. And so when it came time to have our son, we ended up importing a lot of products from Europe for him.
Mm. How did y'all meet? Keith, were you just whipping up the 5-star meals for Megan or what? What was the love story?
Something like that. Yeah, I moved to the States about 14 years ago, and that's where I met Megan for the first time. So we were naturally I got a job in a restaurant. Megan was also working in the restaurant. So that classic front of house, back of house thing. But we discovered we had all these crazy things in common. We were both passionate about regenerative farming and Europe lifestyles and food and dining and all of these things. So that's kind of how we got together.
But yes, he still cooks almost every meal in the house.
I try. They're getting
good.
As this business grows, my meals get a little more basic. But
I mean, the guy was a weapon. That accent, the cooking skills, come on. No shot.
No. Easy.
Yeah.
Okay. Got it. So you mentioned the Demeter certification and your experience in food service. And I spent some time selling food in Australia and New Zealand. And, you know, that product, that certification is on product at grocery stores as well, correct? Same thing in Europe. You've seen that all over the place?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. In mainland Europe, they actually have Demeter stores. Then when you walk in there, everything has that Demeter badge on it. All the fruit and vegetables have the little Demeter badges on them, especially more so in mainland Europe.
But, I went to BioFoc, which is the equivalent to Expo West, I would say, but on a bigger scale. The Demeter representation is in pavilions. It's not just a little booth. It's pavilions.
Wow.
Like four or five different pavilions. So it's pretty cool.
That's incredible. So just from like a, and this is obviously, this is going to be a guess, but if you were to guess at like the percentage of consumers who were aware of Demeter Biodynamic Soil Health in Europe versus that same level of awareness in the United States, like where would you rate those percentages?
It's really hard to get a percentage on country by country, but if you look at mainland Europe, we've done the same thing when we were kind of building our business too. We were like, how popular is this? Like, how well established is this? But there was a survey done years ago in Germany, and the Demeter certification was the third most recognized brand after Coca-Cola and BMW.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is so different than the USDA organic seal here.
Yes. Pretty well recognized.
Yeah, I mean, that's just in Germany. But even in Switzerland, France, Spain, and I think what's happened over the past couple of years with viticulture and with the whole wine industry, the Demeter certification, I think it's the Demeter certification, I could be wrong, but from what I believe, it represents about 1% of the overall viticulture all over the world. But it wins about 60% of all of the prizes, Demeter certified wines.
Wow.
So it's gaining a lot of popularity with vineyards. And so now we're starting to see that kind of come over and into food as well.
And that's the entry point you see here in the States.
Yeah.
Is people recognize biodynamic wine, Demeter certified wine.
Right.
And then when you say it's the same farming method and the same certification, that's when people really pique their interest.
What can we learn from that here in the U.S. as we try and scale this Regen Ag movement? I mean, I think there's got to be some lessons in there, and you guys have a great vantage point into that. I mean, what can we learn from the success Demeter's had over there to do over here?
Yeah, I think they've just scaled it a lot differently than they have in the U.S. It seems to be farmers. It's been happening in Europe for almost 100 years, right? So they've got a real good jump or a really good head start on the U.S. It is growing at a really nice rate in the U.S., but it's been ingrained in Europe and generations of families for almost 100 years. Yeah. And so that's really allowed them to grow country by country.
And Europe has a really stronger standpoint against chemical ag. Glyphosate is really banned in almost many countries over there, where it's widely used here. So I think the awareness from the farmer standpoint as to why they can farm without the use of chemicals, it's a foreign concept to them. So I think once that kind of conversation starts to unfold more, I think you'll just start to see this awareness increase.
Yeah, and I think the regenerative conversation, I mean, you guys know, I would say the regenerative conversation really took off here about anywhere four years ago. In Europe, that regenerative conversation has gone along with the growth of Demeter certification for years, for decades. So they're very more well established in the regenerative conversation, which naturally just leads people, farmers, consumers back to this Demeter certification.
And it's produce and crops, but is it also meat and dairy? I mean, is it across all commodities?
Yeah, across all commodities.
There's actual Demeter pet food.
There's Demeter pet food lines in Europe too.
Wow.
Which I have my sights on being an entrepreneur.
Did not mess around.
Yeah.
So for those of us who have for the listeners who have not been abroad, just try to briefly explain what the Demeter certification is, which I would say Demeter, obviously, like, not classic American butchering, you know, European, you know, words.
You're learning.
Yeah, right? It's all right. We're all getting there. It's a learning planet. But yeah, you know, in as few words as possible, what is that certification and how does it correlate to, like, the regenerative agriculture movement here in the United States?
Yeah. I would sum up Demeter certification as a holistic approach to farming, health, and animal welfare. And I think it's really about connectivity. I think what the Demeter certification does is it focuses on the connection that farmers have and animals have with the land, and it builds upon that. And I think there's a lot of regenerative conversations happening today, but and they're all kind of focused on the same way. I just think that Demeter, Demeter's been focusing and really honing in on that message for years.
Okay. Yeah, so there's some component of soil health, animal welfare, holistic management, and things like that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Got it. Okay. Cool. Well, it's good for us to learn. So, you know, I think we talked a little bit about White Leaf, what you guys do now. You know, tell us about your product line. So tell us about your baby food flavors, where you're sold today, and kind of just give us like the baseline for, you know, where is White Leaf today?
Yeah, totally. Well, we launched in late 2018 in Southern California, being biodynamic, regeneratively farmed, all this crazy stuff. That's where we started, Southern California.
With Air One?
Southern California. Air One was our very first store.
Nice.
And still an amazing camp to this day. Southern California done really well in all the traditional indies, co-ops, smaller grocery stores down there. We jumped up to Northern California, done even better in Northern California. And from there, we started to roll out nationally. So today we have 6 SKUs of baby food. We are in about 2,400 doors across the country. Still very much focused on the specialty and natural kind of food side. We're in Whole Foods, Wegmans, natural grocers. Just launched in Sprouts yesterday nationally, 6 baby food SKUs. And
congrats.
Then our applesauce. Yeah, thank you. Applesauce.
Yeah, congratulations.
2 SKUs of that out. And we have, they're a little bit more specialty, but also a lot more distribution on the West Coast, but they're slowly kind of moving their way over to the East. And when we put out 6 SKUs of baby food and the 2 applesauce, for us being parents, we were looking for baby food at the very start. So we set out with just 6 SKUs, and 6 SKUs are a really nice mix of fruit and vegetables. A lot of baby food brands out there, they naturally will lead very, very fruit heavy because it's very, very palatable for kids because it's super sweet. But for us, there's a fine balance between, you know, a nice mix of fruits and vegetables out there. And then applesauce for us, it's a favorite in our house. It's a pantry staple in our house. You know, our kids today even love it. So launching an applesauce line was something that was really kind of special to us as well. And launching the first regenerative-focused, biodynamic, U.S.-grown and manufactured applesauce made it even better.
We really wanted to show that you could produce this line with biodynamic farmers out of the States. And we had a great manufacturing partner that really saw what we were trying to build. They went ahead and got a Demeter certification for us, and they really took a chance on us. And we were doing the smallest runs possible with them, and they stayed with us since our first run back in the
year. That's awesome.
Wow. I have a story and then a question to follow up on that point that Megan just made. So my story is I go to LA for a week, and I go to Erewhon, and I like buy like 17 packages of White Leaf baby food. And I'm like 28-year-old guy, like at WeWork the next day, just smashing baby food like at my desk. And people are just like, is this guy eating baby food? Like, what's going on? But it's phenomenal product. Talk to us about how you guys built this supply chain, both on the baby food side and the applesauce side, because I mean, this doesn't exist or didn't exist, I'm sure, before you tried to do that. And I'm sure it was not an easy task. And I think we as consumers sometimes get to the store and we see this beautiful thing that's all packaged up and it looks great. And we have no idea kind of how the sausage gets made, so to say. So can you take the audience kind of into behind the scenes of that process of really building the supply chain?
Yeah. So we came up with the concept of White Leaf in 2014. We were sketching out the logo, thinking about building this brand. Our son is turning 9 tomorrow, so he was 1 when we started this.
Wow.
Crazy.
And so we were literally like the what if dreaming entrepreneurial life. And I'm the daughter of a serial entrepreneur. My parents actually did a food business in the 90s that exited to Campbell's and Pepperidge Farm. So we kind of had
I did not know that. Yeah,
what was the food biz?
It was, my mother was way ahead of her time. She created a fat-free brownie that she utilized dates and plum purees and replicated this like gooey, fudgy goodness.
Way before her time. Good for her.
Seriously, like date-based in the 90s, like get that RX bar.
Yeah.
Yes. So they did, they had like 13 SKUs. They were in 11 classes of trade. So I had a kind of a roadmap in place a little bit. So when we thought about this, we had been importing baby food from Europe for Keegan, and my father and I and Keith, we all discussed it, and we're like, there's a missing market here. And so we took us 3 years to find somebody that would take a chance on us. We spoke to almost every company in the U.S., South America, MOQs at the time were 300,000 pouches. I mean, like,
jeez, is that per SKU?
Per SKU. So yeah. You can't do that with
a
customer base that doesn't know they want it yet. So we
sell, right. So that's like for six SKUs, it's 1.8 million pouches.
That's crazy.
You don't want to take a chance on.
And it has to be all the Demeter certifications and all the additional things that these manufacturers wouldn't know.
They were like organic stuff. So
and you actually have to sell the inventory.
As well.
So we found our partner in Europe, really loved what we were building, loved us. They wanted this like family brand to kind of take a chance. Our first run of pants on the US market with. So we imported the first two SKUs, the mango and 20-foot container, and we thought we had struck it. And the pee was a 20. We were like, oh my God.
we spent those years of research. We were looking, discovering the
beat. Amazing. Huge order. We're never going to sell all this. Now I think we've imported
10 40-foots
in the last like 6 months. So,
but I think when it comes back, sourcing, I think we were, you know, BA Association, Demeter USA, cold calling farms, visiting farms. Like, we wanted to get a scope of exactly what was available in America and what could we use in America, knowing that supply and demand was kind of always, you know, in the back of our minds. And it just wasn't there. Years ago, it definitely wasn't there. Supply wasn't there. The logistics between all the suppliers just wasn't there. Now we can, okay, well, let's bring the Demeter, you know, produce to the actual manufacturers in the U.S. And that's just not a viable, you know, we've done all the math and all the work. That's kind of what pushed us back to Europe. So our next approach was it was always going to be Demeter certified, right? It's easy to do another organic baby food, but we always wanted it to be Demeter certified. So then we had an option and that wasn't viable. So why not try and package these products as close to the farms in Europe, where there's a massive supply, and then ship over the finished product. So that seemed to be the way that really worked for us, you know, financially, logistically, everything. It's been a really nice partnership and a strong partnership too for years.
I think it's a really great story. And what I love is the evolution of the supply chain and how now you're looking to try to source. And it sounds like, you know, the supply chain or the domestic growers in the United States are catching up. And now you can start to source some products here. And I'm just getting ahead of ourselves, but I would imagine that's going to try to continue in the future with future innovations. You're going to try to source more from the U.S. just to save on shipping, right?
Yeah.
And support the local communities.
And we're ordering at such large scales now that the shipping really isn't. Everyone perceives that as being the high cost of barrier coming in, but it really isn't that much at all, we're fortunate about. We are in development of a couple new lines of products. One that we're really excited about, not going to mention it yet, but that is going to be a U.S. made and mostly U.S. supply chain created product line.
I think where we kind of Keith had told me about it. I also won't mention it because you won't, but I'm equally as excited about this.
Yeah. Anthony, we'll tell you offline. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. I don't want to feel left out.
And I think when we were doing that, even putting these products in market. For us, you know, we always had this thing of like, well, we have a role to play. If we put these products on shelf and consumers take the products off shelf, it's going to start that conversation with farmers. If there's a consumer demand out there, farmers are going to shift. Farmers are going to listen. Farmers are going to start adopting. So that was our role way back then. And thankfully, we started to see it even come through now. We get contacted by farmers all the time, and we're constantly guiding them towards different groups and because they want to get, how do I get involved in this? Like, who's growing your carrots and how is all of this happening and how am I missing the boat on all of this? So we've seen our little company now turn into almost a crossroads for farmers who want to get really involved and learn more about this, which has been really cool.
And we talk about this theme, I think, on almost every episode, but the average layperson that just shops at the store doesn't understand that these goods still have to be manufactured. So you have to work through logistics and co-mans and the farmers. You have to do all these different things. And it's such the road less traveled to go create these kinds of products and these kinds of supply chains. So kudos to you guys for that. And kudos to you guys for pushing people to kind of new horizons, because without somebody to kind of play mediator and get all the, you know, play symphony and orchestrate all the crew, like, these things don't happen.
It's true.
Yeah, it's been a labor of love for sure. And the other important thing too is I had conversations with so many farmers. We've got close connections with a lot of our farmers in Europe and even in America for applesauce. It's the same thing. When the amount of work that these guys put into growing a biodynamic apple is unbelievable. If the consumers could actually visit and learn more about that, it's unbelievable.
Eye-opening, and that's what happened to us. We started to experience biodynamic farms in person, and it was we don't look back. We buy everything we can biodynamic that's available. I won't touch a wine that's not.
Yeah.
We're really all in this movement.
And just making sure the farmer gets paid a decent wage for all of his work and his passion that he puts into this has always been another little. Key factor in bringing these products to market too. There's a fine balance in there, which, thankfully we've been working through.
The vision for the brand is to move beyond baby food, right? The vision for the brand is to be a provisions company. So can you kind of share with the audience what that might look like or whatever you can? I know there's some secrets we can't share, but what's the vision for that?
So back in 2014, we always knew we wanted to create a family brand. It wasn't just about baby food. It just happened to be baby food is what we wanted at that moment. We saw a lack of availability in the U.S. So when we hatched out the name, we really wanted to give an homage to biodynamic farming and the history that it holds in Europe. So we chose provisions as this word that was from an older time that really encapsulated different products throughout the pantry. So we really focus on regenerating your pantry is what our goal is. So we have the baby food, obviously. Keith said we had 6. We're launching 4 more by the end of the year, so we'll have 10 total. Wow. And then that's going to close the baby food set. And now we're going to focus on the applesauce, which we have 2 more in development right now, so we'll have 4 as an applesauce set.
Nice.
And then we're having the secret product in development right now. And then we also have a line of oats and muesli, which we can talk about those.
Yeah. Yeah, same thing. So what we, like Megan had said, kind of that was always the vision for us to be white leaf provisions. If you look at the website today, very much baby focused, but we're going to start transitioning to that more of a family brand. So naturally with baby food, people who are purchasing baby food, they will research deeper, harder. They will do a lot more digging and naturally lead them to us. So all of a sudden they found this great baby food, but now the kids grow older, they stop eating baby food. But the parents are now looking for pantry staples that have the same authenticity, transparency, regenerative farming, the glyphosate-free. And so that's where now we get to branch into other products. You're probably the first two guys to see these. We're going to launch the first line of regeneratively farmed.
Breaking news on the Regen Brands podcast, baby.
Love it.
And regeneratively farmed biodynamic muesli. So they're going to be a hot and cold cereal. Again, done with lots of biodynamic ingredients, lots of organic. They're also going to be the first to be certified glyphosate residue free. That our certification is we're really passionate about. So we'll have the baby food, the applesauce, the hot and cold cereals, and then we're working on a couple of other secret products that will kind of tie in for older kids and older family members too. So
I feel like your product innovation path sort of like grows like what are your kids' ages now and what are they going to be consuming, and it's sort of like you got to like test space there.
It's so good you would say that, Kyle, because that's exactly we are those parents that describe that like well my son so we have a one we have a 13 month old and now we have a 9 year old. So we started this.
Oh, so you get a great demographic change ups here.
Yeah. This is perfect. Marketing material with the 13 month old.
Right.
But now my son, we love oats in our house. We love muesli, granolas, things like that in our house. But we find ourselves kind of lacking for what we're used to, what we see in the baby food. So, yes.
That's great. So I make regenerative bone broth oatmeal, like oats. So now we're going to have some like green oats with Regen bone broth, some collabs here on some savory oats. So we can get some Alexander Farms regenerative cheese in there. Like this is going to be a great time.
Oh yeah.
But I wanted to touch on some of the sales traction you're getting, I'm assuming I don't buy baby food. I don't, I haven't been to Erewhon with Anthony and I don't have a baby myself. So I've yet to purchase baby food, but I'm assuming there's a bit of a price premium for the white leaf provisions pouches, is that correct?
Yeah, there is. Yeah, I in the baby food set, what we've seen happen, when we launched there and explored that, years ago, you had a lot of organic GMO-free baby food packs. That seems to be the norm in the majority of stores, probably where we all shop, which is really, really cool. But I feel that that's probably the first part of the store where organic and GMO-free have now become the conventional. Now it's everybody's organic and GMO-free. It's the baseline. I mean, it's great. It's fantastic to see it throughout. But parents being parents, like I said earlier, they want a little bit of a deeper dive, right? So they always go a little bit deeper. So when we were doing our baby food line, there was nobody talking about, you know, soil health, animal welfare, promoting biodiversity, glyphosate, which for us as parents, that was a big issue. Parents today are reading about Monsanto. Parents today are seeing climate change happen in their backyard. They're hearing about loss of topsoil. All these things are starting to trickle into their feeds, which naturally trickles into how they research foods, especially when it comes to baby food. When you're feeding kids who have the most palatable and virgin taste buds, palates, guts, immune system, you naturally just want to find this. So that's where we kind of step out a little bit. There's a couple of other brands out there who would fall into the specialty baby food category like us. We're seeing more and more parents willing to pay that little bit extra for that level of purity and that level of transparency that we bring to market.
I really appreciate that sentiment. And what I'm curious about is, as a new brand entering a very well-established set, you know, I sold Plum Organics for a while. Happy Baby's a powerhouse owned by some, you know, big CPG. You know, when you're coming in with a high premium price point and a Demeter certification in the U.S. market, which isn't widely recognized, what was that like, you know, in 2018 versus what is that like in 2022? How has that changed over time?
Well, I think it starts with how we initially rolled out. It worked for us. We were such a small brand when we launched. And like Keith said, we went into Air One first. I think Thrive picked us up right away. So we had really great partners out of the gate that really understood the specialty of our product line and really wanted to hone in on the fact that it was an authentic family brand. We weren't some giant CPG brand that was just trying to blanket the space. So we really had time to grow within strategically. I think the conversation around regenerative has really escalated in the last year and a half, 2 years, that's where we've seen a lot of adoption of our product.
Yeah, and I think even back in the early days, you know, we were sending out a lot of survey monkeys, and we were surveying a lot of different groups of parents and people just to get a scope of what people would like. So we knew what that Demeter certification encompassed, right? We all know in this call all the little farming elements that go into regenerative farming. So we started sending out surveys like, when we came to innovation, it was about, well, what can we do on the shelf that's different than everybody else on the shelf? The regenerative farming naturally was a huge piece, which the Demeter certification gave us the ability to really talk on a deep level about regenerative farming. You know, we asked parents, would they pay a little bit extra for products that were certified glyphosate residue free? 100% of parents said yes. Would you pay a little bit extra for a brand that offered you a free mail-in recycling program for all of your baby food packaging? Because this was also a big issue with parents. 100% said absolutely yes. Or would you pay a little bit extra for a brand who have done the survey on exactly kind of what a good serving of baby food is, and then only use the minimum amount of packaging to safely wrap that to avoid excess unrecycled packaging in the environment? Everybody naturally is yes. So all these little surveys came back. So we knew that that's what we had. That's what we start educating and talking to people about, the ingredients being a number one, but all of the other little additions that we could add on as true innovation, that really what helped to sell the products. And thankfully, you know, the biggest driver in sales for us today is word of mouth. It's been huge for us. You know, parents discover this, our brand, and discover this level of transparency. They become mini ambassadors for the brand. And we've just seen that kind of ripple effect throughout the country, which has been amazing.
And we're being approached by more conventional retail buyers and stores. But given where we're at, and this will be a nice entry into your fundraise questions, I presume, too. But we can't commit yet. You know, we want to be really strategic about our partners, and the partners we're with currently really support our size and where we are and where we're going. And so we've had to say no to some conventional chains at the moment because they just see a buzzword and they see beautiful packaging and they see our movement and spins and they're like, oh, come on in. But it's just a huge effort to get that buyer aware of our product line and why they should be buying us versus the bigger guy right now?
I think before we jump into fundraising, it's really important to hone in on that note. So if I'm hearing you correctly, you've got opportunities to grow your brand. And in CPG, it's all about growth, right? You know, you got your investors, you got your board, everybody wants to see growth. And it sounds like you are unwilling to accept certain growth opportunities because you don't want to sacrifice the integrity of your supply chain.
Yes.
100.
And I just want to touch on how unique that is in this industry where people are, you know, doing everything they can to open as many doors as possible as fast as possible.
Yes.
So I just really appreciate that statement and that sentiment, your dedication to that integrity. It's incredible.
Yeah, we really
want. And there's a difference between building a 100-year success or a 10-year success.
100%.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, at some point your kids are going to be geriatric and you're probably going to need regenerative diapers that you're making, you know, to try to help them out. You'll get there one day. So, yeah, they get the long play in life.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's that, like I said, everybody involved in the business, they're all as equally passionate about it. Anybody who's invested in the business, any buyer who's looked at our products, they've all kind of invested in the business and invested in us and the long-term goal and vision of the business, which... I totally get what you're saying, Kyle. It's not the traditional way that businesses are, you know, grown. But when you're talking about a regenerative thing, and especially in a regenerative business, it's kind of a slow and steady pace. But I mean, for us, it's been what we thought was that has now turned into this. So it's been, it's been great to see the traction.
One thing that stands out to me is word of mouth marketing, capturing that mom, right? Like, that moms are getting bombarded with stuff. You guys obviously have amazing authenticity because Megan's such a big part of the brand. But in the age of TikTok and Facebook and Instagram and, you know, D2C advertising and all the things, like, what are some actual strategies you guys took to have that success? Because that's honestly incredible, I think, in today's environment. And that is really like such a solid foundation to build upon versus some of those other things I mentioned that I think are going to be a little house of cardsy as we move forward. So we'd love to hear you guys touch on that.
Yeah. Early on, we sent out physical sample kits with handwritten notes. I think we sent
out
1,200 sample boxes.
To who? Like just a list of moms that you found online, or what? Who was it?
I had moms that would send me lists of moms. Like it was just, and parents. Like we have a lot of dads too, like that are really interested in the farming aspect of it. So we just sent out.
Yeah, don't sleep on the dads.
Yeah, we can't. And we just literally just sent out handwritten notes. And in the early days, I was fulfilling all the D2C boxes from our office. So, like, whenever there was customer service issues, I would be the one dealing with it, and I would be I'd write handwritten notes on the packing lists. And so we would get a lot of customers coming in saying, "Oh, Sally Smith got your box, and she told me to try you guys." And it just an old school way of doing everything, but it kind of gave us this foundation. I have some subscribers have been our original subscribers since 2018. Yeah. That are still so it's been really
extraordinary.
That's worked.
And I think you've done a great job with the influencer too.
Yeah,
I mean, we've never a lot of influencers out there. Yes, and they will say whatever you want them to say, and then you write a check, and that's fine and stuff like that. But
we say no to a lot of influencers if their feed doesn't match the ethos of our product line. We won't pay to play with them. So like sometimes we'll get an influencer that will say, "Hey, I love your products. I want to work with you," but their previous feed is some junky fast food. I can't get around that. So we have a really strong network of influencers that really support the farming style, really support the brand. And it's amazing to watch their IG stories or their TikToks. They talk about regenerative so well. Like they really just get in on it. So.
That's awesome.
Authenticity is invaluable. It's so important. And it's, I mean, the theme of this whole conversation keeps coming back to me, authenticity, everything you guys have talked about. So kudos to you guys for that.
Yeah. Well, you see, let's dig into the fundraising.
Yeah. You've obviously needed money to make all this happen. So take us through that journey from 2018 to now. What's that look like? Who have been some partners there? How's that influenced your decisions? What does that look like in the future?
Yeah. Early on, we did a small, I mean, we've never been able to, we're never one of those brands that's been like, "Yes, we got $4 million in funding out of the gate." Like, it's always been a journey. So we've been scrappy. We've had our original cap table was more of a friends and family kind of cap table, which has been, they've come on probably repeatedly, at least three rounds with us. Wow. This last bridge round we did was the first time we took money in from people we actually didn't know. So that's been really exciting to have people behind us. And just the growth, but like as Keith mentioned, it's we're a slower strategic rollout. So almost a lot of the CPG VCs have spoken to us, but when they see the slow growth, they kind of say it's not the right fit right now. We're finally getting closer to their criteria, which has been really exciting. We just have a really aligned investor that really understands the importance of regenerative and wants to get behind it.
That's incredible. And again, it's so distinct what you're doing, and the fact that like the main VCs in the space are not interested in investing this time almost tells me like that's how dedicated you are to quality. You know, you're not trying to create the most attractive brand for a VC firm to jump in. You're doing it the way you're doing it. And when they're ready, they're going to be ready. Which, again, is just so novel for the industry and is so admirable. Yeah. Really, really cool.
Money's everywhere, right? But that consumer loyalty is not everywhere. So you have to nail that and then the money will come. And, you know, it makes me think of it's an impressive way to just be that deliberate and take that stance. But I think it's the right way that's going to separate people kind of in the long run for who we are still talking about in 20 years versus 5 years. What has that process been like? You know, what have you guys learned through that process? What are some things that, you know, you didn't expect that have happened in that process?
We've learned a lot. I mean, coming to Mark,
you need what?
Need very thick. You got to get comfortable with being uncomfortable. Yeah. Coming to market in 2017 with a biodynamic baby food line that has never been done before in the U.S., you know, lots of no's, but they were no's from the wrong people, but also lots of really good feedback along the way. And like you guys, we never, the amount of people that were like, hey, why don't you guys just like drop the Demeter certification? Like, why are you guys talking? In the early days, people were like, why are you talking about soil? No one really cares about soil health. I don't understand. Like, why don't you just drop that from here and cut that out? And you'll just be an organic brand with a pretty pouch and we'll get you in, you know, 8,000 doors. Like, it's just, but I think that it's taken us a long time to find the right kind of partners to want to invest with us. I don't think they were around when we started shopping our business around years ago, which is why
and that's probably why we have such a slower growth as well, because we'd close on 300K and we'd run and we'd get our achievements in place. And then we'd go again and we'd close on another 400K. And it was always like this, like it was always like, we had to always prove ourselves. And that's one thing we always laugh about and we congratulate each other on is all of the no's that we received were because we weren't hitting their achievements or their milestones that they required. Mm-hmm. And so then we would do that. And we'd be like, hey, we're here again. We just did what you said we had to do. And we've done that. Yeah. And then they would put a new line in place. And we would always...
constantly moving the goal line.
The goal line always moves. Yeah. And we've always been really proud of ourselves for always hitting the line, which has been exciting.
With that being said, we see a lot of those early no's coming back and checking in and seeing how we're going. And
which has been exciting.
Which has been really, really nice to see.
I like looping in some of the CPG lingo for those people listening that aren't super familiar, right? So when we talk about the specialty natural channel, that's a specific type of grocer like Whole Foods and Sprouts. When we talk about the conventional channel, that's Walmart, Kroger. When we talk about mass, that's Costco and Sam's Club, for those that don't know that. And you guys might not know the exact stats, but it might be interesting for the audience to kind of hear. You're in 2,000 doors, right? So like, how many doors are there in the specialty natural channel? How big is that? How big is baby food in specialty natural channel? Like ballpark numbers, so people can kind of understand, okay, this is how a brand like this has to grow and have a really strong foothold. And then it does this, that, and the other.
Yeah. Thing. So I think in this the space that we're kind of really focused on, especially in natural, I guess it's about 3,500 doors. You know,
but that's... what we're doing is instead of getting one line into those 3,500 doors, we're focused on getting 20 SKUs in that 3,500 to increase the revenue instead of having four baby food SKUs that are in 15,000 locations across the country.
Yeah, that's always been kind of our strategy, is to kind of expand our brand and expand our products within that channel. I guess the natural progression would be somebody would launch a line of products, and you would try get it in every single door in America. For us, we just want to focus where we feel our consumer base is, which is in that specialty and natural food space. Mm-hmm. By launching our oats and muesli baby food line, applesauce line, and then some other products within there, we feel there's a really, really nice kind of business within that. It also builds a really, really nice footprint mm-hmm. for when we do eventually jump into more conventional accounts. We are currently having conversations with crossover accounts. That's probably another one, Anthony, that your mm-hmm. listeners might need to. So crossover would be, it can be kind of in the middle between a conventional account and especially a natural account. Wegmans is a good example of that. Raleigh's in California is a pretty good example. So, that's always kind of been our strategy. And I think it's really nice to build that footprint and that kind of loyal following within there before you take the jump into more conventional mm-hmm. products, kind of, which I'm sure you guys can really, speak to.
Yeah,
absolutely. I think going deep and proving success in a given market, whether that be a specific channel and or geography, building out that data story so you're not purely selling on attributes in the conventional channel, I definitely think that's the right way to go. And, like you said, you're building that brand recognition, and now that you're varying, you're jumping into different categories, you're building even more recognition because you found in multiple aisles, right? So mm-hmm. once you do decide to make the jump, once the timing is right and the supply chain is ready, like, it's going to be that much easier and you're going to have that much more traction. So I think that's absolutely the right way to go.
And investors sometimes get it wrong, and I'll say this. Your most profitable sale is selling more to someone that already buys from you. You're already 100%. In the DC. You're already working with that retailer. They already know how to buy your product. So making $100 on that store versus $50 is way more profitable than getting another $50 store. And I think a lot of times people forget that because we're so focused on door growth, velocity, these other metrics, which are very important. But I love that approach because those are retailers and consumers that are going to be with you guys for the long haul versus just looks good for the Series A or B raise. And then boom, the brand has to, take a step back five right. years after that.
Or yeah. Whatever. Yeah. 100%. And especially with the larger retailers, for, I guess, smaller brand like us jumping into the larger retails, very expensive. It's very exciting, but very expensive. And then you spend a lot of money to get your products on the shelf, and you spend even more money to get them off the shelf as fast as possible for us. And then kind of going into a void where I'm not sure my consumer is there or my consumer is ready, or I'm not sure if that account is ready to back up all the regenerative farming. What are they doing to promote regenerative farming in their stores? It's the change is coming, and too, Kyle, but you see a lot more conventional accounts starting to talk about regenerative farming, which is great. I mean, it's all really, really positive. But for us...
And that's what we're doing with this raise. The use of proceeds really is strong on the D2C Amazon side. We really haven't invested a lot of money in D2C ever. We kind of hedged our bets what's going to take off first. And retail really took off first in the beginning. So we really afforded a lot of our money towards that channel. And then now we're in a position where we really want to get the D2C up and running really well. And make this a profitable revenue stream. It's also going to help us when we do migrate into conventional, because brand awareness will be there. It'll be much stronger to kind of saturate in that channel. So the next 2 or 3 years is really a D2C heavy focus, nurture our current retail, and then graduate into conventional with more brand awareness.
And you have consumer data to say, hey, Walmart, we want to launch in these 50 stores because we have footholds of consumers in these geographies. Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. So we're kind of talking about the future. So we've already sort of touched on this a handful of times about new product innovation, just touched on your DTC strategy moving forward. But what else is in the future for White Leaf Provisions? What are your long-term goals for 5 years from now, 10 years from now?
Yeah.
Thanks,
Abba. Sure. So five years from now, we really want to have at least 20 products in retail. We want to have a really robust online D2C, like diehard consumer. We'll have graduated into conventional. Who knows? Maybe we'll get a Costco account in mass. I don't know. my goal, I'm always crazy. Keith always kind of tampers me down a little bit because I always am like, but I would love...
It's good to have that balance.
Yes. Yes, I would love to launch product lines outside of what our financial model kind of has is right now. Like, I would love to just really explore more innovative products in the regenerative space, pet or cottons or anything like that, that really falls with underneath the brand and kind of rounds out what white leaf provisions really meant from the beginning.
I just want to touch on cotton real quick. So you're thinking about potentially taking the brand outside of food into an entirely different, you know, consumer sector.
But yeah, potentially it's the same messaging, you know, and it's something we've always kind of spoke about. Some of our other past investors have often mentioned it to us because they've got kind of connections in different places. So, yeah, but something we've kind of spoken about.
Topical supplements. I don't know. I'm all over the place. I just see the beauty of regenerative farmed products, and I see the missing market for it. So it just, of course, I'm always like,
yeah. Impact for us too is a huge piece. You know, when we started this, naturally there's like millions and millions of people out there who cannot get access to what we have put in the market and this level of, you know, transparency and purity. So for us, we've already got a couple of really cool initiatives in place already. But it's something we really want to grow on. We want to get this level of purity into the hands of everybody. It's a huge struggle for a lot of brands, but especially a brand for us who are very, very specialty. But you know, I would really hope to see us really expand on our impact.
We work with a really great startup right now called Wellfare, and Cole. He really has created a wonderful product or business model, I would say.
Yeah.
With Amazon, for example, or with some larger accounts, we will have short date stock that we don't want to throw it away. It's still good, but we can't sell it in retail with their long shelf life commitments. So we work with him, we send him short date product, and he repurposes it into food boxes for food deliveries. So right now he's in East Harlem and Bushwick. It's been a really great partnership. We have our Amazon channel set up to dispose straight to his warehouse. I'm excited to see where he goes with this.
Yeah.
He's already getting a lot of interest from other regions, so it would be interesting to see this kind of expand. And as Keith mentioned, as we grow, we'll be able to start looking at more options like the government-funded WIC and such like that. So
that's awesome.
Very cool.
I think somehow tapping into government funding for whether it be SNAP or WIC or something, and you know, if there could be some sort of incentive for folks on those programs to purchase regenerative, I think that's such a no-brainer. I don't know if you two have read Food Fix by Mark Hyman. But he talks a lot about how the government works against itself because it's so siloed. And he presents some really interesting solutions like that. Plug for Mark Hyman and Food Fix. Incredible read if anybody hasn't done it yet. So just want to comment on that. I think it's a really cool idea.
Yeah, and it's tricky. It's tricky to get this level of purity into the hands of people who really need it. You know, we're always, there has to be a natural trickle down effect at some point, but it's something we're working on kind of behind the scenes, and it's nice to be able to do that too, you know.
The government piece that we don't talk about enough as a community is America funded the biotechnology revolution. America funded the computing revolution with government academic research that they funded through research institutions, through special departments of the government. There's nothing going on like that in Regen Ag. You know, we have conventional ag and GMO seed and agrochemical companies funding stuff at land-grant universities. But if you look across the board, you know, Regen is next to nothing. And so not only, I think, is there levers to pull on the consumer side, but also kind of on the research back-end side as well, which I don't know what the right way to continue to bring that conversation forward is, but it's definitely one we all need to do.
You guys should check out, if you don't know it already, Regenerate America. It's Kiss the Grounds initiative. We're part of that.
Yeah.
So they're the first time that there's this group going in at policy level to really make a change. So that's something to watch and for the listeners too to join and be a part of. So
is that the one that's about trying, it's focusing on the 2023 Farm Bill?
Correct.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a really, really cool initiative that they're taking on.
Yeah. So I got to ask about certifications, right? So you guys are USDA organic, Demeter certified, certified glyphosate residue free. We see all these folks trying to do a regenerative certification. Just talk to us about how you guys have approached that as a brand and maybe where you see certifications in 5, 10, 20 years.
Yeah, totally. Like years ago, and kind of back in, you know, for us being in Europe and everything, that Demeter certification encompassed everything that we wanted to see, you know, from products that addressed, you know, like I said, soil health, animal welfare, farmer welfare, biodiversity, all of these things.
Zero pesticide, herbicides, or fungicides was really important to me as a mother. They don't even use synthetic pesticides.
Yeah.
It's all herbal sprays and natural compost. So there's nothing on these farms. It's just holistic management.
Yeah, and that's kind of that's been the North Star of the entire business, you know, as we've grown it. And it's mm-hmm. it's allowed us to talk in a much deeper level about regenerative farming. And so it's something we've mm-hmm. really stuck to. It's nice to see the ROC certification come out. They're very much aligned with the Demeter certification. I think it's actually yeah. part of their certification thing. But it's mm-hmm. I think that the conversation needs to stay at a very, very high level. I understand that it's a tiered approach to yeah. get into regenerative farming. But I think we can all agree here. We're already starting to see a little level of greenwashing that's kind of coming into this regenerative farming. When you have some massive. Yeah. you know, really bad few CPG brands that are talking about regenerative yeah. farming.
They will remain nameless yeah, on yeah, the podcast, yeah. but we know what you're talking about.
We will give them their day in court. Yeah. We will have them on and let them defend themselves.
It's a little bit scary, but you know, I still think it's the bar's got to be set really high, and I think people really have to work their way up to it.
Yeah.
And that Demeter certification, mm-hmm. the ROC certification, Landmark verification are like, right up there. I see more and more certifications coming yeah. to market, and they seem to get a little bit more customized, which kind of worries mm-hmm. me a little bit. I do see Demeter International really starting to ramp up their efforts. Like Demeter International, they're representing about 65 countries across the world. Even the team here wow. in the US have done a really good job of starting to ramp up and kind of put their name out there as being, you know, a real gold standard in this. We just kind of hope that they stay on that path and they continue to kind of just keep doing what they're doing.
And as we launch more products, we are looking at other ways to incorporate other certifications into our portfolio. Yeah. Because there are farmers in America doing really cool things with regenerative now. And so that's exciting is to start seeing, okay, we have Demeter baby food. We have Demeter applesauce and oats and muesli. Like, what else can we launch? Can we do an ROC product? Can we do a land and market product? So we really want to, and I think that goes back to what Keith was saying, is that we're like a catalyst for this conversation. So it's exciting to see if we can push the envelope. That's what we've always wanted to do. So it'd be fun to launch, see what other products we can launch utilizing different certifications along the way.
Mm-hmm. And it's this triangle of influences. Like, what do the brands think? What do the retailers think? Yeah. What do the consumers think? And like, where is that all, like that tug of war triangle gonna all shape out?
Make it a square. Well, you know, how do farmers interact with these certifications? How expensive is it for them to do it? You know, I know that there's some pushback on a couple of the certifications that we've discussed just moments ago because of, mm-hmm. you know, if you have X number of cattle, you by default can't qualify for this certification.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. so I think what's really interesting, you know, Keith, you mentioned that the new certifications seem to be relatively customized. And what I'm nervous about with regenerative in the United States is that there are so many competing certifications that there's a lack of unification, a unified voice, and they're all vying for market share, region share, if you want to call it that. And my concern is that it's going to reduce the amount of traction the movement can take on as a whole.
Confuse people.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, like, oh, well, this mm-hmm. one's Demeter, this one's ROC. What's the difference? Which one's more important? Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure what the solution is for that. And I do think that there's, you know, consumers use certifications to educate themselves so they don't have to dive deeper, right? They just want to trust the badge. Mm-hmm. So there's definitely mm-hmm. a place for them, but I'm nervous about and curious to see how the next 3 years goes in the United States specifically. Mm-hmm. It's going to be really interesting to see how it all shapes out.
I totally agree, Kyle. I mean, I didn't want to step out and say I was nervous about it, but I'm a little bit nervous about kind of where it's going and how fast it's changing, right? Like mm-hmm. over the past 2 or 3 years, there's a new certification comes every... feels like every couple of months, you know. Yeah. So, I'm just worried
even
that
with the word regenerative too, like some farmers will say that they're doing regenerative farming practices, which they may be, and I'm not saying that they're not, but they're still mm-hmm. using chemicals that I wouldn't want on my crop to begin with. So, but the way that they're doing things still meets that regenerative criteria. So, I think that's why we do stand behind that Demeter certification, because it's set in stone. It's a historical certification. It's been around for almost 100 years, and they have the guide in place already.
I think that the ROC certification kind of worked really close with Demeter too, which was really amazing, because I remember we were an ally of the ROC certification. It was really nice to see that collaboration start. And so, yeah, hopefully it'll just stay at a higher level and kind of be the benchmark, you know, in the ROC as well.
Right. And to touch on what Megan said, and then we'll go to our last question. It's like, I always say regen is a continuum. And what I mean by that is there's still a guy or gal in the Midwest growing monocrop corn and soy that we do want them to cover crop. Right. We do want them to stop tilling, but they might still spray or they might still do some tillage. And yes, you know, can we say they're regenerative or they're trying to be regenerative? Yes. But like, where is that on the continuum versus full someone producing edible food under a Demeter or an ROC certification? So I think the conversation has to have guardrails, it has to have accountability, it has to have transparency, and it has to have nuance, because it's going to be very nuanced, and we can't move the needle enough on food security, on climate, on all the things, unless we get people to get on the continuum and then just continue to work their way up, which leads into the last question, which we ask everyone, which is, you know, I'm curious to hear both of y'all's take on this. How do we get regen brands to have 50% market share by 2050?
Starts at the farm.
I would say educating on the farms.
It starts with the farmers.
Yeah.
It starts I see it visually when you ask me that. It's a two-prong approach. You have the farmers on one side, educating the farmers on why regenerative works. And then you also have the consumer education in place too. You need to show why this applesauce is $5 and that applesauce is $1.80. Like, you really have to show the benefit of regenerative foods to the consumer, while you're also showing the benefit of regenerative ag to the farmer.
And I think bringing it to, I say the farmers, yeah, absolutely. The consumers are a big driving force in the whole thing. But when you educate farmers and farmers learn about this, which you guys will see in tons of, you know, Gabe Brown and all these guys doing amazing work out there, it's your natural instinct is telling you this is the right way to do things. This is how I should be doing things. This is how I should be growing crops and you know, working with animal husbandry. And this is exactly how it should be done. There's no farmer that experiences regenerative farming and goes on these farming courses and says himself, I have no interest in this. Let's just go back to the chemicals and let's just spray it. Like, it's ingrained in the human spirit that this is how we should be growing crops. This is how we've been growing crops up until the 1920s. I mean, this is until everything kind of got messed up, and they were told, well, you don't need that anymore. You just need this. And so it's, I think, just educating the farmers and then having the farmers start to implement kind of what you said, Anthony, piece by piece into it, and just start that is for me, I think is the real key. We've spoken to hundreds of farmers over the years, and we kind of explain about what we have and what these farmers are doing and what they're doing and what they're not doing. And when you actually see the financial outcome and their profits and the long-term outcome of doing this and cutting back on all the other expenditures that industrialized farming has, it even makes financial sense in the long run. So for me, it's educating farmers.
And farmers are historically market takers and not market makers, in my opinion, right? So it is that education, but it's also the policy, the consumer demand, whatever, that's going to make that argument so compelling. Because I think right now people will tell you, I can sell regen to a farmer just off of they can manage their inputs, and it's already profitable, even if there's not some crazy premium market for their products. But I think we're going to need to get all the way there. I think it's got to be that compelling to take us all the way there. One critique of regen is always, I can't scale. Like, this is a small farm thing. And I think what you guys have probably seen in Europe totally contradicts that. So can you touch on that? Like, what are some examples?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what we see farmers over there who they don't get, when you're Demeter certified, your entire farm is certified, right? Like, you cannot just get 1 acre certified in your farm and then call your farm biodynamic. So it's very, very strict. Mm-hmm. So an entire farm is certified. So what farmers will do is they will actually start an offshoot or a separate little farm and have a couple of acres on there. And this has been something I've seen kind of happen on constant scale in Europe. And they will have that farm certified biodynamic, even though it's very small. We're only talking farmer market amounts of produce. But then what they'll do is they'll add on another acre onto that, and then they'll add on another 10 acres onto that. And we see that happening. This is how Demeter approach farms and farmers in these small, new Eastern European countries, where this is the normal way of farming. You only have a couple of acres and it's small scale. But then they will have these farmers and incentivize them to keep adding acres onto their farms and plant fruit trees now that we won't see any fruit from years to come, constantly financially incentivizing these guys. And that's what they've done very, very well in Europe. I mean, I think with biodynamic farming is still growing at a really, really impressive rate in Europe. And as Europe starts to push more out towards Eastern European countries, we see it continuing to grow. And that's, I mean, we only would only hope to see that kind of level happen in the US, but that's what they've done in Europe. And I think that each country in Europe has their own Demeter certification board. And what they've been able to do is really support the farmers through the education and also through the financial means as well. They also help a lot of these farmers. They will actually buy a lot of the seeds. They'll give them educational courses. They will take them to other farms where they do internships.
And we're already starting to see some movement in the States. There was always Demeter in the States, and then there was the Biodynamic Association.
Yeah.
They were two separate entities. The Biodynamic Association really focused on farmer welfare and supporting the farmer, really honing in on the beautifulness that is biodynamic from the growing standpoint. Whereas Demeter was more of compliance certification of the farms and such like that. So they've merged. They've become one entity now. So, and that just happened only a few months ago. So everybody, it's starting to progress.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see how this works. And they have a really great farm stewardship program for younger people wanting to get into farming. So it'll be interesting to see how this all unfolds.
I think that's the perfect ending point. It'll be very interesting to see how all this unfolds. Just thank you all so much for joining us. Super informative and fun conversation, and excited to share.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it
so much.
Yeah. Thank you.
For show notes and more information on our guests and what we discuss on the show, check out our website, regen-brands.com. That is regen-brands.com. You can also check out our YouTube channel, Regen Brands Podcast, for all of our episodes with both video and audio. The best way to support our work is to give us a 5-star rating on your favorite podcast platform and subscribe to future episodes. Thanks so much for tuning in to the Regen Brands Podcast, brought to you by the Regen Coalition and Outlaw Ventures. We hope you learned something new in this episode, and it empowers you to use your voice, your time, and your dollars to help us build a better and more regenerative food system. Love you guys.